Wednesday mornings on CITR from 8 to 10 a.m. It's the Suburban Jungle Show with your radio host, DJ Jack Velvet. Thrills, chills, excitement, and music. That's the Suburban Jungle Show, Wednesday mornings from 8 to 10 on 101.9 FM in Vancouver. You can also catch this show, streaming and podcast, at www.jackvelvet.net. Don't miss the Suburban Jungle Show. Wednesdays, 8 to 10, 101.9 FM, CITR.
Juicebox is a sexuality education show geared to adult audiences. Listener discretion is advised. Dropped into Juicebox Radio, where sexuality educators quench your search for responsible, progressive sexuality over your lifespan. Yes, yes, you have dropped into Juicebox Radio. You've landed. Caroline and I have a little private joke now about that from last week. Don't touch that dial. You're exactly where you want to be. Can you hear me?
I think I can hear you.
Hold on, I've got to turn you on. All right.
Are you playing with technical? Are you playing with your buttons, Julia?
I am.
I like it when you play in your buttons. And if you've just dropped in, you're listening to Juicebox Radio on CITR 101.9 FM. And you could be one of our online listeners, I suppose, at CITR.ca. And if you ever miss a show, you can download our podcast at juiceboxradio.com. But however you have decided to spend this hour with us, we're really glad to have you. So welcome, welcome, welcome. Tonight we're talking about a really cool topic that I think people really like to talk about, penises.
Well, genital integrity is really, I think, the name of the game tonight.
I like that.
Genital integrity, very important. And if you want to call in, please do at 822-2487, that's 604. UBC CITR. We have a very special guest in tonight. His name is James Lowen. Thank you for joining us, James.
Thank you very much, Julie. It's a pleasure to be here.
Yeah, I've met you, I don't know, 3 years ago or something at Pride.
Yes, right.
And you had a sign, a placard, saying genital integrity or something, and I stopped you and said, what do you mean, what do you mean?
I was so thankful for you to stop me, because a lot of people see that and they just try to turn away and not think about it. But mm-hmm. it's an important issue, so I appreciate your interest.
Yes, and interestingly enough, I got your number then, and I've carried it around in my daytimer, and I have so many amazing people that want to be on the show, and I'm so grateful whenever we have a guest, and it's sort of like, the lineup. But I lost your number or something, but then when I was on a panel with you recently at... We were sexperts, weren't we, on a panel together?
We were.
And I thought, I know this man. And so we started talking, and you were speaking at the panel about genital integrity. You sort of slipped in the conversation.
I try to always slip it in.
And I'm like, hey, I know you. Wait a minute. So after exactly, nice. So we talked, and I was like, James, you got to be on the show.
Thank you so much. I can't believe I found you again.
Yay.
Yeah,
so.
It was meant to be.
Mm-hmm. So tonight, I think I just want to sort of frame the conversation, and that is around genital integrity, which we were talking about. Well, what does that mean? Well, for me, it means keeping your baby, however they're born, whatever genitals they're born with, in integrity, meaning that they don't get cut or changed or circumcised or manipulated in any way, that we just are born perfect. What does it mean to you? I'm just wondering.
You said it really well, and I think I love the way you framed this, because the subject of circumcision is one that is a real party stopper, and yet everybody is curious and intrigued by genitals, and the idea of keeping them whole seems entirely natural to myself and to many people. Mm-hmm. But you know, we're up against traditions that have kept this from happening for a lot of people, and mm-hmm. this movement for genital integrity is to educate people so that they will in fact recognize the benefits of keeping their children whole and mm-hmm. doing everything they can to restore themselves if they choose to.
So tonight we're going to be talking a little bit about sort of the pleasure involved, the issues that might come from. I know a lot of parents I've had conversations with, not really sure what is the difference, why do we do it in the first place, what is a foreskin, etc. We're going to be talking a bit about that. We're going to be talking, I think, later on in the show. Caroline, you probably have a good sense of the show because you built it.
I want to touch base as well, just how you got involved and what made you get involved with everything. So we'll be touching base in regards to that, what circumcision actually is in terms of that as well,
and what is a foreskin
restoration as well.
All right, well, got a lot to cover.
We do. So let's start with circumcision.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think we'll let James speak to that. What is circumcision?
Well, circumcision, I speak from experience. I was circumcised as a baby, although I didn't realize it until I was 7 years old, in comparing my anatomy with an intact boy. And I felt that something was really wrong with him, because he didn't seem to have a head on his penis.
Mm-hmm.
And
the little turtleneck.
Yeah, the turtleneck.
Yeah, I've never seen one of those before.
And, it's kind of weird.
And I think that's the reaction of a lot of people mm-hmm, who have grown up in a circumcising environment. Mm-hmm. And when I asked him about it, he was so knowledgeable at age six. He was a little younger than myself. He pulled his foreskin back and showed me, and he said, well, I'm just like you, except... And then he leaned forward and ever so gently put his hand on my forearm and said, but you had part of your penis cut off when you were a baby. And that shock of hearing that and knowing immediately that that was true.
Mm-hmm.
I could see the scar. I could see how he was perfect and unscarred. And I went in the house and demanded to know of my mother what had happened. And she had always encouraged us to bring our questions home, and we can talk about anything in this house.
Good. That's good.
And as soon as I asked her, did I have part of my penis cut off when I was a baby, she said, who told you that? And then she forbid me to play with this child again.
Mm-hmm.
So I knew there was something very, very curious about this subject.
So did you ever find out that, I mean, this is quite a wonderful story, I mean, for me to hear. So did you ever follow up on what happened then and with your mom?
Like, why
she kept you away?
my mother was a woman who was very much in shame about sexuality. Mm. And, you know, I've had to piece much of this together just from her actions because I don't haven't had her words so much about it. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, let's move on. So, Caroline, I know that you had a good chance to talk to James for a while mm-hmm. in your interview, so I know you have a lot of questions. I just want to say that circumcision, there's a lot of sort of reasons that people choose to cut the foreskin off of their little baby boys. You know, there's a lot of orthodox reasons. Judaism still is a very big piece of that.
And as you were telling me the other day, it's even back in like Stone Age cave drawings and Egyptian tombs that.
Yeah, it's the Egyptians that we know. Mm-hmm. It's the earliest traces that we have of circumcision.
And just about how it's just different things. Sometimes it's a rite of passage to adulthood, other times with slavery, like you're telling
me.
How people would use that just to mark their slaves, just how they brand as. I'd never heard of that before until you told me, and then I found more research about that, which blew me away.
Right.
Because I'd always thought of it as the branding and
yes,
things
indeed.
Like that.
Yes, yeah.
But it's definitely a different way to brand somebody, yes. So it's kind of scary in terms of that.
I think it also goes back
to the Bible.
There's all this history that we're talking about that we could go into great detail about mm-hmm. the religions and why the different religions have chosen or still do choose to do this for whatever reason these religions choose to do it. I don't know. I don't think that this is really the place to talk about that for myself because I want to respect the diversity that is out there.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I don't agree with circumcising your children, but let's bring it sort of a little forward to the integrity conversation that the whole purpose of this show is that we want to, for some reason, the medical world has and is again recently putting into the social conversations all over that it saves you from HIV if you circumcise is protective. So there's that conversation I want to talk about tonight. I also want to talk about this you know, the whole reason that people started doing it as well in the 50s and everyone's just lopping off the foreskin because they're worried about cleanliness and just all of this whole safer, it's cleaner, that kind of argument because that's the one that I want to fight tonight.
Okay. If I can say one thing, Julia, you said reasons for circumcising, and I'm very clear about this.
There is no reason.
There are no reasons. There are excuses.
Excuses.
There are excuses.
Traditions.
And you know, it very quickly becomes obvious when you talk about, for example, hygiene, which was an excuse for circumcision and has been for a long time.
Yes.
And
it's coming up again.
Oh, yes.
Yes, with the HIV
protection.
It's just so ridiculous to me.
What's happening is that people who are, as I say, hell-bent on circumcising grasp at every possible excuse. And so when they're using this HIV/AIDS circumcision connection to try and promote circumcision, the minute someone is skeptical, they throw in, oh, but it's cleaner. Well, the fact of the matter is, for you or I or any of us to wash our genitals or anything below the waist takes a few moments.
Mm-hmm.
And the intact genitals take 2 seconds more.
Yeah.
And we should all be very highly suspicious about anybody who says that the most sensitive part of our body needs to be excised to facilitate cleanliness. That's a very cruel way of achieving hygiene.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Particularly in a place that's pleasurable to wash.
No, it's true.
Interesting. Yeah. Do I like washing my genitals? I always find it a little bit of a problem. But yes, peeling the skin back, getting the schmegma out of there.
Yep.
It is an exercise.
So you do have trouble with it yourself, you're saying?
Well, I've got a very sensitive glands. My particular clitoral glands is a little more sensitive than I think a lot of people's.
Yes.
If I had been circumcised, I don't think I would have anything left down there. So I'm just glad that I have had genital integrity.
I'm glad for you.
Thank you,
and I'm glad
parents.
For all of your listeners who have
you,
genital
parents.
Integrity
yeah.
and recognize the importance of protecting their children.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I have some. Are we going to go into other topics? I just have some. Yeah, I have some anecdotal stories, and I remember talking to you, James, about them. One of them is with these young parents. I know the ones I've talked out of cutting their baby's foreskin off. And they've kept their baby's foreskin. Thank you, thank you. Those parents that know that I'm talking to them. This pulling of the foreskin back, when do you clean it? How is this all, you know, how does this all work?
Very good question, Julia. This is something that is, there's so much misinformation.
Yes.
And the misinformation, by the way, is coming directly from those who are circumcising. And the way that their line of reasoning goes is that, okay, well, if you're not going to circumcise, you know you've got to get right in there and clean under that foreskin and begin a vigorous program of genital hygiene. Well, nothing could be further from the truth, because a little boy or a little girl does not need anyone probing or retracting their genitals. And in fact,
I didn't.
No.
I never did. I never had anyone do anything when I was little.
Thank
my
goodness.
Mom, she never did. And we had four of us, and there's
yes.
two boys, and they were both uncircumcised. One of them chose to end up getting circumcised at 13. Different story. But my, you know, our mother just washed in kind of a normal way. And
right.
She taught us all to kind of go deeper when we were older. She's
sure,
like, well,
exactly.
dig in there and get it.
Exactly.
Get more cleaning going on. And we're like, okay, you know, and...
In
like
fact,
your teeth, you know, like
right,
you eventually
right.
learn how to clean your teeth, you know.
But particularly with foreskin retraction, in infancy, the foreskin is fused. It's tightly muzzled to the glands, and it's not supposed to retract.
Which is the head of the penis, just
right,
so you know.
Right, or the head of the clitoris.
Yes, the head. Of the
and mm-hmm. and the and of course, men and women have foreskins.
Yes.
And they're analogous structures in male and female genitals. So, the yes. foreskin of a male is an equivalent of the foreskin and a little bit of the outer labia of a female.
Mm-hmm.
But back to retraction and how very bad this is, a child naturally is going to explore themselves. And when they do, the discovery of their own genitals, and in the case of a boy, when he retracts his foreskin and finds his glands, that's part of his sexual self-development. And circumcision robs a child of that. And a child who finds that is very excited and goes to his mother and whoever's there and
parent,
is
yeah.
thrilled.
Mm-hmm.
And astute parents
hard
have...
on going, yeah, mommy, look at this thing. When I poke it out and pull the thing, it's all pink. Look at it. You
yes.
know, yeah, for sure. For
I heard
sure.
a story about that recently, and it's delightful. And
mm-hmm.
for astute parents who aren't in shame about sex, mm-hmm. that's part of their child's natural sexual development.
Mm-hmm. It's important.
Yeah.
I agree with you. And I think I mentioned on the phone how I was quite ashamed a couple of years ago because I had... given some wrong information based on what's told,
yes.
what parents
yes.
are told out there.
Yes.
Like you're saying, vigorous,
yes.
like cleaning process, get the thing back, foreskin, pull it back, clean
right,
underneath.
Right.
And so that's the what I've been taught in my higher education
see,
as a sex educator, completely wrong information.
See, that's how prevalent that misinformation mm-hmm. is.
I think I must have traumatized yeah. this family with their little baby boy.
Well, let's hope not.
Let's hope,
let's
not.
Hope he's okay.
How old is the little boy now?
He's four, I think, now. Yeah.
Yeah. See, well, yeah. See, we learn, you know, that there's no rule book that comes with us, and there's certainly not a dotted line on our genitals that says cut here when we're born.
And don't cut here.
Yeah.
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 In regards to that, I was going back full circle in terms of mm-hmm. with your mom and
yeah.
in terms of the reaction, and it really piqued your curiosity back then
oh,
as
yeah.
to why. You're mentioning, how did that shape you as a man in terms of...
That's very interesting, because I think it was a double, it had double effect, because
okay.
on the one hand, I knew that there was something extremely shameful about, I didn't have the word for it, the circumcision,
yeah.
but also there was something that she, my mother, was really upset
mm-hmm.
about me being exploratory with another child, and he happened to be a boy, so maybe, you know, there was some powerful messages came through with that.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
And then, and you're mentioning later on in life that you were in a bookstore later on when we did a pre-interview, and we're saying that it was a pretty cool experience. Do you want to tell our listeners
yeah.
a bit about that?
Well, you know, I'd heard about foreskin restoration many, many years ago, the back of a magazine, and it seemed so unlikely, and I tugged at myself and thought, oh, this could never work. Put it out of mind.
What do you mean? You tugged at yourself. And
well, I, you know, it tugged at what skin was left.
Oh,
and you know, from what little was in this magazine, it just seemed like, well, you know, this is hopeless. But then, you know, 13 years ago, I was in Little Sister's bookstore, and I was buying some periodical, and I'd been through the store and, you know, slowly made my way through there. It's in my neighborhood. I know a lot of people there. And I was waiting for the clerk to come and ring up my purchase, and I felt a tap on my shoulder, and I thought, oh, it's a friend of mine. And I turned around, and the friend wasn't there, so I knew it was my friend who always is playing jokes on me. So I turned quickly the other way, and there was nobody there. But my eye caught sight of a book in the far corner of the bookstore called The Joy of Uncircumcising. And later, when I went back to the store and tried to figure out how I even saw the title from that distance, yeah. I don't know how, but I went over and picked up that book, and it was the first time I'd seen anything published that was really scholarly on this subject. And the sidebars of this wonderful book are filled with quotes from anthropologists, doctors, human rights advocates, nurses,
psychiatrists,
people who have really delved into this subject in depth. Mm-hmm. And I was blown away by the just the tone of the entire book and the fact that there was so much information that it was alluding to.
Right.
And I bought the book and read it backwards and forwards and started contacting some of the other people that were involved in this movement.
So this really changed your life.
It really did, yeah. And I truly went from being a very shy, I've always been very shy, but this particular issue...
You've never known. Not anymore. Anyway.
Not anymore.
So was I.
Yeah, this issue, it's because I think when you realize the importance of something,
yeah.
And especially when you have the information and other people have got misinformation, it becomes imperative, and it is a human rights issue.
Yeah. It is a human rights issue, and I think that we have been doing a lot of harm to society. Now, I know that Caroline had spoken with you, James, about this as well earlier in the pre-interview, that we don't want to make those out there who have had their foreskin cut off or the circumcised people, men of the world, feel lesser than or anything.
Absolutely not.
We want to give them some hope that perhaps they could get it back if they don't. If they love their penis the way it is, great. I mean, I've seen a lot of, I'd say the majority of the lovers I've had have been cut.
Yes.
So, great penises. I've had a great time.
Right.
Aesthetically, sometimes they can look more nice to the eye. Personally, I like a natural cock. That's my preference, but that's also because I know of the benefits to a natural cock as far as, you know, pleasure and the hand job. You don't use lubricant.
Right.
There's all these sort of benefits that come with a natural cock, with a man who has a foreskin. But we don't, you know, we want to kind of give those men out there that have that don't have foreskin some hope.
Absolutely.
Or some, you know, you look great too, and we love your penis and you're fabulous.
Well,
just
maybe,
don't cut your baby boy's
Get educated.
Genitals off.
Yes. Understand what's been taken and what you can do. And the thing is that to be a good lover is not just your genitals. And the thing I hear constantly from women is that men don't pay enough attention, take enough time, and be sensitive to their needs. And those are things that anybody can work on, penis or not, you know, foreskin or not.
The sensitivity to the needs of the lover, you mean?
Yeah. Just, you know, being... Listen to your partner. What do they want? You know, yes, a foreskin is part of natural equipment, but there are great variations in genital structure from one person to the next.
Yes.
And, looking at, if you look at all men, there's such a variety from those who are very, very small to those who are very large. And, you know, there's a lot of psychological stuff that goes around all of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
but when we look at the issue of circumcision, I think that we start to see that it really does affect people, and there's a lot of denial about it, and there's a lot of aggressive behavior.
What do you mean?
Well, I'm circumcised, and I'm perfectly okay. Yeah. I don't want to hear that faggot talking about this, you know?
Mm.
And a very, very defensive attitude about something which... it's understandable.
People like that in terms of whenever something's new. It's it's kind of like, I think the first person who brought fire back to the tribe, like seriously, was probably ostracized. And it's like, oh, you're a big bad person.
Yes.
And that where whenever somebody speaks out about something that is not within somebody's comfort zone, we laugh or we, you know, it's a defense mechanism automatically kicks in, like you're saying, in terms of the aggressive stance.
And maybe especially about sexual matters, because they are so very powerful, you know, connected to our emotions.
Yes.
And society society and religion has had such a hand in controlling people's sexuality. Of course, circumcision is one of the very powerful ways that they do control.
But you've been going to bat on this stuff politically as well, hey? Like in terms of circumcision.
We try,
and human rights.
Every possible, by every means possible, you know, just to try and raise consciousness and get people to. I don't want anyone to believe what I say. I would just like somebody to say they're interested and go and do some research for themselves and, you know, try and open their minds to it. And I'm confident that when people do that, they're going to very quickly understand, you know, why. In the same way we understand that it's wrong to cut off a baby's finger. You know, nobody questions that.
Yeah. Or the nose or whatever. I'm not 100% sure if we're going to get to this in the second half of the show, but as intersexuals, and do you know anything much about that subject matter is one of my questions for the second half. Also, I wanted to have us speak a little bit more about the pleasure side of things. And so how, you know, how does a natural penis differ from... how does a cut versus uncut cock differ in the pleasure side of things? What does the foreskin do really to add to that or take away from pleasure? Let's talk a little bit more about that in the second half. I'd like to talk more about that myself. Also, then how do you get restoration, if that's possible? Get some details about that. And then also just my personal interest, too, is around erectile function. I personally, and I've found a few studies, not many, I've dug very deep, but I have other things I need to be researching, so I can only do my side research projects. Maybe I'll do my PhD on this one, but I found a few around erectile function later in life and having a foreskin as being protective against erectile dysfunction. So that link of protecting the glands over time, and does that attribute to function, erectile function later in life? So I want to talk about all those things. I don't know if we can keep up with that all myself. I'm a bit tired, but hopefully we can remember that list.
Yeah, no, we'll play. I think it'll be great. So, callers, if you've been listening in, and I hope you've been enjoying this conversation. I know I have. But just keep your dial locked on 101.9 FM and give us a call and let us know what you think. Tell us if you're circumcised or uncircumcised and what your experiences have been. And you can give us a call at 604-UBC-CITR. And I cannot believe I got that phone number wrong. That's UBC-CITR. We'll be right back.
T-shirts. Well-mannered cardigans. Pants, jackets, and underwear.
The Friends of CITR card scores you discounts at Antisocial, Berku's Angels, and Hits Boutique.
Uzbekistan prints or Rajasthan colors.
Support CITR Radio and pick up your card today.
My face is finished, my body's gone, and I can't help but think standing up here in all this applause and gazing down at all the young and the beautiful with their questioning eyes, that I must above all things love myself, that I must above all things love myself, that I must above all things love myself. I saw a girl in the crowd, I ran over, I shouted out, I asked her if I could take her out, but she said that she didn't want to. I changed the sheets on my bed, I combed the hairs across my head, I sucked in my gut and still she said that she just didn't want to. I read her Eliot, I read her Yeats, I tried best to stay up late, I fixed the hinges on her gate, but still she just never wanted to. I bought her a dozen snow white doves, I did her dishes in rubber gloves, I called her honeybee, I called her love, but she just still didn't want to. She just never wants to. Send her every type of flower. I played a guitar by the hour. I petted her revolting little chihuahua, but still she just didn't want to. I wrote a song with 100 lines. I picked a bunch of dandelions. I walked her through the trembling pines, but she just even then didn't want to. She just never wants to. I thought I'd try another tack. I drank a liter of cognac. I threw it down upon her back, but she just laughed and said that she just didn't want to. I thought I'd have another go. I called her my little O. I felt like my soul must feel when she said that she just never wanted to. She just didn't want to. I got the no pussy blues. I got the no pussy blues.
Juicebox is a sexuality education show geared to adult audiences. Listener discretion is advised.
Well, so, Julia, should I be saying that I have the no-cock blues since I'm sticking to my New Year's resolution these days?
Yeah,
it's been so. 6 months and going.
6 months with the no-cock blues.
And so, listeners, if you're just listening to that song, that was by Grinderman, and it's the no-pussy blues.
And we chose it because the monkey is furiously gripping his genitals and looking very upset, so...
We thought it was appropriate.
Yes, for the...
So we thought it was very...
Genital integrity argument tonight. Yes, with James Lowen. Thank you, our guest.
So if you're joining us right now, you are on CITR 101.9 in Juicebox, of course. I hope you're liking your stay in the Juicebox. Which, on that note, we should get into our juice berries. So, Malaika Millions and her breast friends, Scriptease Writers, are going to be performing.
Oh, Malaika and her big-breasted, wonderful women again.
Oh, she's one of the best people who do the Marilyn Monroe impersonation. And they're going to be doing that at Lick on Friday, July 27th.
Oh, that's this Friday.
It's this Friday. Mm. I think that could be quite sexy.
Yes.
And that body humor is back in style. I never knew it went out of style.
I don't know.
And I don't know why I'm doing this, Malaika.
The sock full of machismo is going hand in hand, tete a tete, bush a bush.
Bush a bush.
With our burlesque lineup of
sexy women.
Good. Mm-hmm.
And including Malaika herself.
Excellent. We like her. And then there's some burlesque, which I was really excited about on Saturday.
Me too. Evil Bastard, actually, from Screaming Chicken's actually going to be headlining in there.
Oh, we've had him into our show, haven't we?
Oh, we haven't had Evil, but we've had
one
of the producers, but we have seen him perform. And you can check out dollhousestudios.com for more information. On Sunday, when you're trying to shake off that hangover, since you'll be dancing till dawn at the burlesque, I think you should get naked.
At the Dollhouse,
yes.
Get naked and ride. We're going to, aren't we? We're going to be there. It's even on Facebook, you and I are going
I know.
To this thing.
Well, I won't be riding. You'll
James,
let
aren't you,
ride you
going
naked.
To be there?
I'll be there.
Yes, it's exciting. So
I think it's going to be the biggest one ever.
It is. Yeah. We're going to break those world records. Yeah. I'll be there pole dancing with Luscious Dance, which will be pretty fun. So those of you, if you want to check it out, make sure you're there at 11 o'clock square. Doesn't that sound like high school? Square. I don't know where this baby voice is coming from out of
where?
My mouth.
Where? Sunset Beach?
Sunset Beach.
And then there's Over the Rainbow as well. You're going to be performing excellent, so come down, wear something, and then take it off, put it in your bag, mm-hmm. ride around naked, and then...
You don't want to get arrested before you start.
Yes, exactly. Don't come on the bus naked and walk around. Just come in droves with other people naked. All right.
And I'm on the burlesque theme with this, the Over the Rainbow. Let's get kicking up because the Pride Festival's starting. So start it up on August the 2nd at Celebrities Nightclub. And
we
check
love
out...
Pride. Oh, pride.
So I've had sweet so many soul good, kicks it up.
I've had so many good Pride shows over the 4 years I've had this
really?
Show.
Really?
We're not doing a Pride show
well,
this year.
Well, maybe we should. No.
Maybe we should. I don't
maybe
know.
We should, and maybe we should do our Summer Smut show all about Pride.
Yeah, maybe we should do Summer Smut all on homo.
That could be really
homo,
sexy.
Homo, lesbo, queer stuff. That'd be great.
I think a lot of people would like that. We'll get
some
everybody
transgendered stories as well, because the trans men, they're the ones that really turn me on the most, I think, somehow.
Really?
It's the guys with the pies. All right.
Nice. I'm going to have to quote you on that, Julia. Can I put that on Facebook on your wall?
Did I say that loud?
Yes, you did.
All right. Okay. So for those of you who are joining us for the second half of Juicebox tonight.
We're lucky enough to have James Loewen with us. So
yes.
It's pretty
thank
cool.
You.
And mm-hmm. we're talking about gender integrity. So if you want, you can call in if you're interested in finding more out, or you can listen and listen deeply.
I'm just to our next bits.
Which on that note, before we went for our break, we have a whole bunch of things we want to cover for the second half. But one of the things I did want to touch on is you've done so much great work politically and just working with groups of different amazing people, just changing things. And I think one of the coolest things that you were telling me about the other day is just that across Canada now, that circumcision is something you have to pay for. Medical doesn't pay for that anymore.
Yes, it's no longer covered by any of the medical plans in Canada.
So Saskatchewan was the leader in that in 94, was it?
Well, I don't know who was the first, but okay. Saskatchewan was the first that had a policy statement issued nice. By the Saskatchewan College of Physicians and mm-hmm. Surgeons, the most strongly worded one in the world to date, followed very soon after by British Columbia. And the British Columbia statement, for the first time, mentions the idea of an infant's human rights to genital integrity. And this statement from the BC College strongly cautioned doctors to be very aware of what they were doing and to, in a sense, prepare themselves for what they are expecting are going to be upcoming lawsuits, because we've been aware of young men very, very angry mm-hmm. about being circumcised once they realize the information that now is readily available. Mm. And so I think lawsuits are going to be coming.
And there was that one lawsuit we were just talking about on the break with,
yes.
Just trying to remember the gentleman's last
William
name.
William Stowell
in
the United States?
I was going to say Paul, actually. Actually in
oh,
BC.
Paul Tenari.
Mm-hmm,
yes.
The 9-year-old
yes.
who was circumcised where they had to...
As a punishment. Yeah.
I didn't realize it was for as a punishment.
Yes. Yes,
really
he was caught masturbating
tell.
As a boy in a Roman Catholic school.
That's right.
Yeah. But it's interesting because very, very often you see talk of circumcision around the theme of punishment.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that subconsciously this is what's happening.
I think it's cool, though, that they had to do the restoration in terms of the foreskin.
Right. Now, Paul Tenari had a surgical restoration.
Mm.
And what we were talking about earlier with regards to foreskin restoration is
non-surgical.
Yeah. And this is something that's important. And I know we don't have a lot of time to go into great details here, and it's hard to show it on the radio.
You're mentioning there's stuff that people could check out on YouTube.
Yeah, they can go to YouTube and check out foreskin restoration or Google it.
So you're going to basically pull the skin of the penis down over the head.
That's
over
correct.
The glands.
And, over
and you're
yes.
going to sort of with clamps of some kind, little pincher thingies, which
and
probably
weight.
Don't hurt that much.
Right,
and
not
weight.
At all. Yes, no
you know,
no pain involved.
Yeah, so it's kind of like, you know, a little clampy thing, and then it pulls the skin down.
Right.
And like, you know, your balls over time, boys, you must notice that your balls are getting a little bit more droopy. Okay.
It seems
so I guess
to happen.
Are they
over
like
time,
our breasts?
Like our breasts, like our
really?
Ass cheeks. These things are drooping
we have
down.
To accept these things.
Yes. So you can actually on purpose droop your foreskin
you
over
can.
Your over
you
your
can.
Glands. And then get the movement. Like I think you said that
that's
really beautifully
right.
on the phone the other day.
Mm-hmm.
Get the movement, some of the movement back over the shaft and
right.
glands. Get sort of that nice shooka.
Exactly.
Kind of like with the hand.
Exactly.
Is there any websites you'd recommend? Because there was a couple different ones
yes.
I found. Some
yeah.
were saying that you had to keep it on for hours in a day, and others where there was more weight added, where it was only for a couple minutes that
right.
you're supposed to hold?
Well, you know, it's something that you have to be fairly dedicated with. And anything that says just a couple of minutes a day is not very likely to happen.
Yeah, even if it's like really heavy weight.
Yeah. It's like the diet that says you can eat chocolate bars, you know. but
that's
really,
my diet.
You only have to watch what you eat for 2 minutes a day.
Yeah.
Pig
out.
Discipline,
yeah.
Discipline, discipline.
Oh. No, if people are interested... probably one of the better websites for foreskin restoration is from a group in the United Kingdom called NORM UK. And NORM stands for the National Organization of Restoring Men. And people can get all the information they'd like from there, and it's linked to many other sites.
The nice thing is there's a couple chapters in Canada, but it was neat because there's none in BC, which surprised me.
Yeah.
Because I think it was Alberta and Montreal. I thought there was some in Ontario as well. I can't remember.
There are. These are usually groups of very dedicated people who, like myself, feel it's important to get the information out. Mm-hmm. For me, it was less important to be involved in teaching foreskin restoration as it was simply to speak about genital integrity.
And change things.
And try to change the status quo. Yeah.
And have you found, since you've started your journey in the last 13 years in particular, since you found that book at Little Sisters, that things have changed a lot?
Oh, yeah. It's like an avalanche. It's amazing from that time where there was very little information available. Mm-hmm. We have watched the... just the general public becoming very aware, and some of the terminology, like genital integrity, has caught on, and people understand that. And I think it is something that people intuitively understand once they can get past the gut reaction of how horrific it is.
Sorry, Caroline, do you have something?
Oh, I was just going to ask if you knew a lot of people personally who had done the restoration, and if the further ones that you knew, if you found that they had more pleasure in terms of sex afterwards.
Yes.
And masturbation.
Just back to what Julia was talking about with regards to mobility of the penile shaft skin. On an intact man, the most mobile skin of his body is that of his penis.
Okay.
And that mobility is there for an obvious reason. Pleasure.
Mm.
And with circumcision, that mobility is usually taken away, sometimes to the point where that becomes the tightest skin on his body.
Sometimes there's been a lot. The circumcision's been so tight that it's like there is no mobility at all. We have a caller. I'm just gonna grab them just in case it's somebody that we really want to talk to. You never know. Hi, you're on Juice Box.
Hi, is this the Hans Klaus Misery Hour?
Not quite. You'll be with him in about 20 minutes, darling.
Oh, okay. Sorry about that.
Do you have a circumcised or an uncircumcised penis?
Circumcised.
Okay, how do you feel about that? Do you know that there's anything kind of different? Have you noticed the boys in the change room? Do they look different from you? Or do you look the same as everyone else?
About the same, yeah.
Huh. And so...
Sorry, I don't want to answer too many personal questions on the air.
Okay, how about just one more? What's your age?
I'm not going to tell you that.
Oh.
So, anyhow, thanks a lot.
Okay, call back in 20 minutes.
Yeah, I'll do that. Bye.
That was interesting.
Maybe we should start calling people.
If you're going to call during Juice Box, you're going to get questioned.
You're going to get questioned all about sex.
He was a good sport. So I think the reason I was asking him that is because I want to kind of, I know we interrupted what we're saying, but
great.
I just want to bring it to my personal experiences around parents and seeing the child and wanting the boy to look like daddy does, and this argument there that's so hard to deal with for a lot of parents, right? So let's talk about that one first.
Let me just say this. Making the baby look like daddy is just another excuse for circumcision, and what's really happening is that the father isn't aware of what he's gone through, or on a subconscious level he is, and the way that he appeases his feelings is to perpetrate it on the next generation. And this is the real problem with genital mutilation, with circumcision, is that those upon whom it has been done will enforce it upon their offspring without question.
So it's kind of like an abused person, a victim.
Exactly.
Interesting.
And understanding this issue for me, there were two writers I read that really helped clarify this, and one of them is Alice Miller, who's a world-famous Jungian analyst, and talks about how we poison children by teaching them to follow rules rather than teaching them to reason. And right. Circumcision is really just about following rules, because if we reason, we don't do it.
I was wondering, can you answer that? Sorry.
Sure.
The other thing is, for me, around the parent stuff, like, I mean, my brothers, you know, were circumcised, uncircumcised, and one of them had to deal with that later in life, and I'm not sure why he chose to, I don't know, but my mother was like, it's not up to me, it's that, you know, don't play with it, whatever. I don't think my dad is, and neither is my stepfather. And I'm so grateful in my family, which is very rare. It's very rare that the boys have been left whole. Mm-hmm. So I'm not sure why my older brother did, but I know that I have an ex-boyfriend who had a tremendous amount of problems later in life trying to maintain his sexual health, and he ended up, you know, with permanent sort of issues and stuff, so he decided to lop his foreskin off.
Right.
You know, this was about 15 years ago, when nowadays it wouldn't happen.
Sometimes it's...
Do we want to have him on there?
Yeah.
Okay, so we have a caller. So please answer that.
I would just say to that is that there's a lot of peer pressure, and as human beings, we want to fit in, and if everyone is circumcised and a boy isn't or a girl isn't, then sometimes they pressure their parents to... able to fit in.
Yeah. So the pressuring of the parents, I think. What about the medical stuff? Have you heard, like, about this HIV prevention thing?
Oh,
I'm
yeah,
just kind of
yeah.
like, I want to talk about that for a little bit if we can.
Well, let me say
call
this.
Call back. Sorry, I dropped that.
It was Hans, actually. He wanted to say that he thought it was really cool that we're doing this topic.
Oh, that's great.
And had some comments, which I thought were really cool.
Well, maybe he'll call back.
Hopefully he'll call back and share.
Sure.
Yeah. I'll just make a quick prediction about the AIDS circumcision connection.
Yeah.
I predict that within a few years, we will see this in the same light that we have seen every other excuse for circumcision used.
Mm.
And what's particularly telling is the way that people have jumped on this bandwagon. And
yeah.
the conclusion is
Why?
That, okay, we have between a 50 and 60% reduction in HIV transmission, supposedly.
Yeah.
That these
yeah. It's fine.
But the fact is that men still need to wear a condom.
Yeah.
Whether they're cut or not.
I think it's very interesting. Caller, are you on?
Yeah, well, I told you, baby, you hang up on me.
Okay, hi.
All right.
It's okay.
I really appreciate you doing this, because, you know, I know many guys, well, not back in Poland, but I know quite a few here, that they really can't really admit that they regret that what happened to them. I even know they are parents as well, and they're doing the same thing to their children. You know, they experience this thing themselves, and they're still doing to their children. I don't know, is this envy? Or I have no idea how to explain it. I just, you know, I cannot believe we talk about it. It's 2007.
I know, it's
just so many guys, you know, totally alienated and depressed just because of this.
Right.
And this has to stop somehow. And I think that this, all this medical society, medical establishment is doing something wrong here, because I think they just go after the money, because it gives them something else to do.
Yes, I think you're absolutely right, caller. The money is a very, very.
The medical services are taking money, and there's other reasons too around just doing it. And I think also, the caller's talking about, you know, trying to make the boy look like you, and how, you know, how to stop that trend.
Yes.
You know, how to.
Why would the father not want to look like his perfectly formed son rather than fit the son to look like the surgically changed father? I mean, if the thing is likeness, that we want to make likeness, then shouldn't we be trying to aim towards that which is whole rather than that which is cut?
Mm-hmm.
But the thing is that, you know, fathers and sons will never look alike. You know, the father is going to be at least 15 years older.
Hopefully.
At least.
Hopefully 20.
Yeah.
25.
And perhaps balding and, you know, many other mm-hmm. aspects. And, you know, why don't they just buy matching baseball caps or something, you know.
Instead of having matching cocks.
Yeah. Dad and lad outfits, you know.
Well, it's just simply big abuse. And I think I lost my call.
It is abuse, yeah.
I lost one of my friends that called you because.
Really?
I don't know why. But.
Oh.
Oh, well, that's all right. Anyway, girls. Sorry to waste your time, man.
No. You're not wasting our time. Thank you for calling in and being passionate about a subject that I think is really, we're speaking about. It's important. Thank you.
Cheers.
I want to return to this
about the HIV.
Yeah, like this is the thing.
Let's talk a little bit more about that.
Yeah.
One of the things that's interesting here is that 20 years ago, in 1986, a doctor by the name of Aaron J. Fink, who's now deceased, was very, very keen on promoting circumcision, and he was using every possible excuse, including AIDS, which at that time was in its infancy. And what he said is that the keratinization, which is the scarring which happens to the glands, everything forward of the circumcision scar is scar tissue. And that scar tissue, he said, was a condom for life. Mm. Well, at that time, most of his theories were dismissed. But he kept on, and others have attempted to hold on to that thought. And, in fact, what they did in Africa is highly questionable. They performed this study and stopped it partway through, claiming that the benefits of circumcision were so great they had to stop the study and just circumcise everyone. But what's really revealing, and here's what your callers can do, is go to YouTube and look at some of the videos that have been prepared by these so-called doctors, and just look at them. They are so uptight, anti-sexual, and the thing is, if we value a part of the human body, if we value our fingertips, if somebody told you, well, if you could cut off all your fingertips, you would...
You would not get this STI, you know, maybe you would never get HIV if you cut off all your fingertips. You might not by like 5% or
but by
or
the
something
way,
or
you
whatever.
You still have to wear a condom, but you cut off your fingertips will bring... But you see, because we villainize the foreskin and we have people looking for excuses, then what's very telling here is the way people have jumped on this bandwagon.
What I find very surprising of myself is that what I know of the foreskin is unlike any other cell structure in the human body, unlike women as well. It has these protective effects. It has like a regenerative cell structure and Langerhans cells.
Langerhorn?
Langerhans.
You pronounce that so beautifully.
All these Germans.
It's interesting you mention that, Julie, because right now the Dutch study on the Langerhans cells is suggesting that these cells are very beneficial to combating HIV.
Exactly. That's what I was going to say.
Right.
There's cells that actually fight
right.
not just HIV, but other viruses and bacteria.
Yes.
And that's part of what schmegma is good for. I'm sorry.
Well,
that word is, you know, it's a bit smelly stuff and it's kind of oily and stinky, but it works well to, like, combat, kill viruses and bacteria.
Yes.
And that is what is there. And that is what a foreskin does, as well as women.
Yes, it's natural.
And so it's kind of important.
It's interesting because with that whole study,
you keep it.
It is important, but what they're saying actually, the AIDS Committee in Toronto, because the study with the World Health Organization in regards to AIDS and stuff like that, they do say that yes, you know, uncircumcised men are more vulnerable in terms of acquiring HIV during vaginal sex than circumcised men, and because the foreskin is more susceptible to nicks and tears, but the bottom line is it does not reduce, like you said, it can reduce men's vulnerability, but it does not eliminate it. And again, they really stress, you know, condom, because the current research does not say whether or not uncircumcised men are more likely to pass on the HIV virus than circumcised men.
Right.
It doesn't stress that. So it points out what it wasn't. There was a really neat article in the New York Times Review as well that basically had a lot of these points. This was, and simpler English, which I tend to like picking that kind of stuff. But I thought that was pretty cool. And also, too, just in terms of it's still not clear whether or not circumcision, how significant is that reducing that risk.
in terms of that, in terms of the risk of HIV transmission to part male partner, especially a top during anal sex, because they don't, it's just heterosexual sex that they cover in that. They look at other different types of sex, and there's so many different types.
Absolutely. And one of the things that wasn't taken into account in the African studies is the variations of sex that happen there. And there are practices that we barely know about here in the Western world.
I'm curious. Like tell me.
For example, there's something, well, you're not necessarily going to like the sound of this.
Oh, we can like all sounds of whatever.
All right. But there's something I learned about recently called dry sex, where the woman puts astringents into her vagina in order to increase friction for both partners.
Gosh.
And I'm sorry, I don't know too much more about it. It's something I've yet to learn.
Oh, we should send them those condoms with those bumps on them.
No, that's tickler. James is talking about like not using any lubricants of any kind.
Yes, and actually drawing things out on purpose.
Yeah.
And the thing is that
I've never heard of this.
You know, the Western world goes into Africa and does these studies with a preconceived notion. They wanted to prove that circumcision was beneficial. And so they found it, and they found it so fast they had to stop the study. But what's interesting is when you mentioned here, Caroline, about the foreskin tearing, this is coming from those who are circumcised, who are villainizing the foreskin, and what they're neglecting to say, the foreskin is also the root of much pleasure. And again, we're removing part of the body that is very, very specifically designed for pleasure and gives a great deal of pleasure to both the person who's attached to it and their partner. So when we take that into account, then maybe it puts this whole thing into perspective.
Yes. I personally have spent a lot of time arguing for longevity of the glands.
Yes.
So clitoral glands, penile glands, the actual head, the purpley dark part that's super, super sensitive, whatever you want to call it, that particular part of your skin has only so many nerve endings. For many of us, the clitoris, many more than the male. The entire penis is in just that little tiny button that we have. But this thing, I think if you could imagine a woman with her skin completely cut off of her clitoris and just the glands piece there hanging out, rubbing on her clothing and her underwear, and whenever she masturbated, she'd have to use a lot of spit and a lot of lube instead of just rubbing her sort of skin or pulling her skin over her, over her, over the shaft of her clitoris and the glands of her clitoris, like most of us do as women. You could imagine over time that that glands would become more desensitized. So this is my argument with uncircumcised penises, is that over time you've got to use a lot of friction, a lot of lube, a lot of stuff to get off and to come eventually, if you want to do that. If you sorry, go off on a tangent at the moment. If you don't want to come back inside your body and whatever, so over time I think that you would lose your sensitivity. I don't know, and so I've sort of found some studies that have said, circumcision is linked to long-term function, erectile function. And erectile dysfunction. Caroline was suggesting to me that I should get Viagra to pay for some PhD study of mine to see where the connection is to a cut cock and long-term erectile function, because I think there's a link.
I think so, too. And you know,
how could there not be a link? I mean, just think about it. Like, logically, what I just said. Logically, I'd say has a link.
So you might as well get your study paid for and have some fun doing it when you're getting your PhD. Your education's taken care of.
I've had a couple of studies that I've found, but I find it interesting that I can't find very many others.
There's a new one that's just come out. It's just been published, a penile sensitivity study, and the result of that was that the conclusion of that study was that circumcision ablates the most sensitive parts of the penis. And, you know, for any of us who've had experience to look at the glans clitoris or the glans penis, it comes with its own custom-designed, highly erogenous sheath, which is there to protect it and interact with it in an erotic manner for life. Except when somebody steps in and says, you don't need this.
Chop this off. Okay, so we never did get a chance to talk about intersexuals. Have you done any kind of advocating for intersexuals?
I have, because, you know, I recognize that this is an area that had, until recently, been totally neglected. But thankfully,
yes, it has been.
Some wonderful people, including Cheryl Chase of California, who is an intersexual advocate, and many of the issues are very much the issues that we, when we speak of genital integrity, we're talking about men, male, female, and intersex, variations, all variations on a theme. And we're all human.
Well, I just wanted to end the hour with that comment on the intersexuals. For people that don't know intersexuals, there's a whole variety, but 10% of the population is born, you know, biologically intersexual, which means you have usually ambiguous genitalia. So at birth...
Not 10%, maybe... I don't mean to contradict you, but do you have figures I don't know about?
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah, 10%. Oh. 10% of the population is intersexual. It's very high.
Oh.
It's very high. It's usually a combination. I would say the ones that have born with ambiguous genitalia, where you can't really tell. They have a phalloclit, which is a, you know, clit looks like a penis but very small. Or they have, a testicle and some combination where the outside genitals are ambiguous, where you're not sure.
Yes.
Those are about 3%. 3 to 5% of the population are in that category. But there are 10% intersexuals in our population right now. There are everywhere. Mm-hmm. It's just that they're usually just a little bit more androgynous looking, and their genitals don't look ambiguous when they're born. They change over time. Their body systems, are different inside. Going through puberty, they may have a transgendered kind of questioning thing going on. But what I'm talking about tonight is that 3 or 4 or 5% of those people that are born with genitalia that I'm not really sure what to do with people. Well, they just lop them off, make them look like girls, take their penis off.
That's right.
Though it may only be a 3-inch penis when they get older. Right. Point is that off goes the pleasure. Bye-bye. No more orgasms.
The shock of all of this is
non-nerving.
Is realizing the measure that the medical profession uses, and they say that a clitoris that is bigger than or a penis that is smaller than. So any child that fits into this space is automatically surgically altered in order to appease the adults.
That is changing. I
yes,
do
it
know.
Is, thankfully.
It is changing. So we are over time.
thank you so much for being on the show tonight.
Yeah. Oh, thank you too.
Really wonderful.
I really appreciate your interest.
Yeah,
anytime.
And your advocacy work is moving, and I'm glad we finally got you. And please come on the show again.
You're
James.
My allies. I'll be here anytime. Thank you.
And we'll get to see you on Sunday for the naked bike rides.
Definitely.
So I hope everybody, hope you enjoyed the show. And Julie and I are going to be back next week with another fresh and juicy show. But then that will be our sexy smut show. So email us any sexy things that you want us to read on air, your sexy experiences, etc., etc., etc. So stay tuned for Hans Kloss's Misery Hour with Marion, which is up next on CITR. He is a very sexy man to be miserable with, and he's totally posing in his sexy stuff. We're going to be back next week at the sexy hour of 10 o'clock.
You just experienced Juicebox Radio, a show dedicated to developing your relational and individual sexual health, expressing diversity, celebrating queerness, and encouraging pleasure at all stages. Be sure to tune into Juicebox every Wednesday night at 10. In the meantime, you can check out juiceboxradio.com. Thanks for listening.